That's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Lefonier. There's mystery coming up in this hour. Later on, The Dead Man Walks, a story on Box 13. But right now, the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, with the most popular pairing of the famous characters on radio, of Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce. They star in a story called The Darlington Substitution, heard on ABC on January 4th, 1947.
Kreml Hair Tonic and Kreml Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Well, once again, it's time for that weekly visit with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson. Let's join him, shall we?
Ah, there you are, Mr. Bill.
Good evening, Dr. Watson. Well, have you quite recovered from your holiday festivities?
I think so, my boy, and I was particularly flattered by the number of friends who were kind enough to remember a rather elderly and lonely doctor at this time of year.
Well, as long as you keep telling those swell Sherlock Holmes stories, you'll never be lonely, Dr. Watson.
Then I'd better get on with tonight's new adventure. It involved us in one of the most shocking scandals of the 19th century. A scandal that, had it ever emerged in the light of day, might easily have brought ruin and disgrace to one of the most famous men who ever came a member of the House of Lords.
Now, this one I've got to hear.
That adventure began in the very early days of the great man's career. World acclaim and handsome fees were some years ahead of him. And in those times, we spent many long evenings discussing whether a decent living could be obtained by the practice of criminal detection. On the day that this particular story began, we just finished our breakfast. Holmes, a curved pipe clenched between his teeth, was scanning the personal columns of the morning paper. I can almost hear him now, as he said...
Dear me, Watson, the agony column of the Times is more than usually barren this morning.
Are you looking for a possible client, Holmes?
Naturally. Since we already owe Mrs. Hudson for 2 months' rent here, and our doorbell has been frighteningly silent during that period, I must see what possible service I might render these unhappy correspondents.
Well, I glanced over the column, but I couldn't see anything very promising.
No, Watson, it's a ragbag of bizarre happenings. What a chorus of groans, cries, and fleetings. One skims through them, and what does one glean? Lady with a black boa at the Prince's Skating Club wishes to meet gentleman who was kind enough to... That we may ignore, I think.
Yes, she doesn't sound as though she needs your services or mine.
Here's an item. Surely Jimmy will not break his mother's heart. That appears to be irrelevant. If the lady who fainted on the top deck of the Brixton bus... She doesn't interest me either, Watson.
No, probably anyone else who wasn't on that bus.
Every day my heart longs for... bleat, Watson. All this twaddle is unmitigated bleat.
Very disheartening, Holmes. You haven't had a case for over 2 weeks.
Yes. Sometimes I think I chose the wrong profession. What do the public, the great unobservant public, who can hardly tell a weaver by his tooth or a compositor by his left thumb, care about the finer shades of analysis and deduction? As to my own little practice, it seems to be degenerating into an agency for recovering lost lead pencils and giving advice to young ladies from boarding schools.
Holmes, come over here to the window.
What's wrong, Watson?
Look at that man walking down the street. He's looking at the numbers of the houses.
Let's hope 221B is the number he's searching for. What do you make of him, Watson?
Oh, I must see what I make of him. Well, I'd say that he is a foreigner. Yes, foreigner. Look at those flashy clothes and his pointed moustache.
Oh, don't be misled by externals, old chap. Observe the steady, controlled gait. No trace of the light agility of the Latins or the military heaviness of the German. No, Watson. I think an English gait in foreign attire would suggest an expatriate Englishman, only just returned from a stay abroad.
He is coming here, Holmes.
Meet him on the stairs, Watson. It'll save Mrs. Hudson a trip.
Yes, so that you are. It's all right, Mrs. Hudson. How do you do, sir? How do you do? Would you please come along up? That's right, sir. Straight up here. In here.
Which of you fellows is Sherlock Holmes?
I am, sir. And your name is...
Tremaine. Reginald Tremaine.
I'm Dr. Watson. Sit down, won't you, Mr. Tremaine?
My business won't take long. Holmes, I need protection, and I'm prepared to pay for it.
Protection from what?
My life's been threatened. The police wouldn't do a thing for me, so I've come to you. I'm told you detective fellas will do anything for money.
Oh, really? Then you've been misinformed, sir. My friend...
Your friend is very interested in Mr. Tremaine's problem, Watson. Pray continue, sir.
Holmes, I want you to warn my cousin. Tell him you'll get nowhere by threatening me. Frighten the wits out of him if you can. I'll give you £20 and another 20 if I need you again.
And who is your threatening cousin?
Lord Darlington.
Oh, really? Charming fellow.
He's a scoundrel. But his title impressed Scotland Yard. That's why they wouldn't help me. Well, even a title can be vulnerable. A public scandal would shake him. And that's what is going to happen if he threatens me any more. And you can tell him so from me, Holmes.
I've always heard of Lord Darlington as the very model of an English aristocrat. Why should he threaten you, Mr. Tremaine?
That's none of your business.
Oh, my soul, none of your...
Your job is to see that he doesn't carry out his threat of thrashing me with an inch of my life.
Very well. For £20, I shall warn Lord Darlington that I stand between you and a thrashing. The fee will be paid in advance, please.
I have it in this envelope here. And I expect immediate action, Holmes.
You shall have it, Mr. Tremaine.
Holmes, the man's insufferable. Why'd you take on the case? He's a bounder. Let him get thrashed.
These four crisp £5 notes persuade me otherwise, Watson. We owe money to Mrs. Hudson, and your medical practice shows little signs of picking up. I must take what fees I can.
Oh, how can my practice pick up when I spend half my time chasing all over the country with you?
In any case, Watson, ask yourself why such a man as Lord Darlington should threaten Tremaine with physical violence. Obviously, only because Tremaine is himself in some way a threat to Lord Darlington. There may be yet another fee in this case. And a much fatter one.
You're going to see Lord Darlington at once?
Yes. I'd ask you to come with me, old chap, but after your remark about chasing all over the country, I hesitate to waste your time.
Rubbish. I was only joking, and you know it, you silly fellow. Of course I'm going with you, Holmes. Get your coat and hat. The game's afoot.
£10,000, my dear cousin, or the scandal will be spread all over London.
It's preposterous, Reginald. And I warn you that if you continue in this vein, you'll get that thrashing I promised.
Oh, no, I won't. I've engaged a detective fellow by the name of Sherlock Holmes. He's going to act as a bodyguard. So you'd better not try any tricks. He should be here any moment.
How dare you bring a stranger into this mess? How dare you?
That's right, my dear cousin. Bolster up your courage with the brandy bottle.
Be quiet, Reginald.
It'll cost you £10,000 to keep me quiet.
I won't pay it.
The scandal will make pretty readings in the newspapers.
Before we go any further, Reginald, I insist on one thing. I shall bring Lady Darlington to here, and you must make this shocking accusation to her face.
I shall be delighted to.
Yes, Jenkins, what is it?
Excuse me, Your Lordship, but there's a Mr. Sherlock Holmes and a Dr. Watson to see you. I told them that you were engaged, but they seem most insistent.
Better have them come in, my dear cousin. We may need independent witnesses.
Oh, very well. Show the gentleman in, Jenkins.
Yes, Your Lordship.
And then if you'll ask Lady Darlington to come here, I'll be very glad to make my accusation in public.
It's blackmail, Reginald. That's what it is. You'll never get away with it.
Won't I? I think you'll be surprised.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Allow me to introduce my cousin, gentlemen. Lord Darlington.
How do you do?
Jenkins?
Yes, Your Lordship.
Ask Lady Darlington to step in here for a moment.
Yes, Your Lordship.
Lord Darlington, I greatly admired your speech in the House of Lords on tax reform. I only wish we had met under different circumstances. As it is my duty to...
Oh, that's all right, Holmes. I've already told my dear cousin that I'd engaged your services. I want you both here as witnesses.
Witnesses? To what?
Reginald has made a shocking accusation. As soon as my wife comes here, I'm going to insist that he repeat the statement to her face. Now, there you are, Clara.
I'll just put Gordon to sleep, dear. Hello, Reginald.
How are you, Clara?
My dear, I want to introduce Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do? But do sit down, won't you?
Yes.
Oh, but what's wrong? You all look so dreadfully serious.
Clara, my dear, Reginald has made a shocking accusation. It concerns you. And I insisted that he repeat it in your presence.
An accusation against me?
Yes, Clara, my dear. You see, I'm requesting a paltry sum for concealing my knowledge of the Darlington substitution scandal.
Substitution? What on earth do you mean?
Who should understand me better than you? The baby asleep upstairs, the supposed heir to the Darlington title, is not your child.
That's a lie. How dare you say that, Reginald?
Lord Darlington, surely you were present at your son's birth?
Well, as a matter of fact, I wasn't. I was abroad on government business at the time. My wife went to the country with a paid companion. My son was born there.
Oh, no, my dear cousin. A son was born there, and then it was passed off as yours.
That's a foul lie. Albert, make him leave this house.
I'm afraid, Clara, my dear, that, well, he's threatened to go to the newspapers. We must hear him out.
Lord Darlington, surely the matter is not hard to settle. You say your wife had a companion. Confront her with a story. She can establish the truth of the matter.
Yes, of course she can, but where is she? I haven't seen Maud Harris since she left me a year ago.
Then I have a surprise for you, Clara. She's waiting in my cab outside now. I'll tell Jenkins to send her in. Jenkins?
Yes, sir?
Ask Miss Harris to join us. She's waiting in my cab.
Yes, sir.
Albert, I don't know what devil's work Reginald's up to, but you don't believe him, do you?
Well, of course not, Clara, darling.
Mr. Tremaine, how did you get in touch with this Miss Harris?
For an employee, you ask a lot of questions, Holmes. I met Maud Harris at Brighton last week. As soon as she knew I was the black sheep of the Darlington clan, she thought we might profitably put our heads together.
And so you organized with the idea of blackmailing this poor lady.
Such a valuable secret is surely worth a few £1,000, Dr. Watson.
Maud.
Yes, Lady Darlington, it's me.
You're just in time to settle a most important truth.
I'll handle this, Reginald. Young lady, as I understand it, you claim to know that the boy lying upstairs is not my son.
Who should know better, Your Lordship? He's mine.
Maud, how can you tell such a lie?
It's no lie, and you know it, Lady Darlington. Your child was born dead.
Albert, make her stop saying such things.
Clara, my dear, control yourself. Let's hear this shocking tale to the end. Well, go on, young woman.
You were abroad, Lord Darlington. When her ladyship lost her child, she was terrified. She knew how much you longed for a son, and she made this plan.
Oh.
I was a widow, and I was going to have a child, too. We fooled the villagers, even the doctor, by giving each other's names. And so my son was born as the Darlington heir.
Maud, that's the most shocking lie I've ever heard. I can't stay here and listen to any more of it.
Mr. Holmes, I understand you're a man of discretion and ability in such matters. What am I to do?
I would like to ask this young lady a few questions. Miss Harris, why have you chosen to reveal the supposed truth now?
I thought that money could compensate me for the loss of my boy. But I was wrong. A mother's love can never be stifled.
Indeed, and I suppose Mr. Tremaine's plans for blackmail are purely incidental.
Oh, keep out of this, Watson. It's no affair of yours.
Establishing truth and justice is anybody's business, my good man.
Mr. Holmes, I'll pay you any fee you name to disprove this monstrous story.
Oh, no, you don't, my dear cousin. Holmes is employed by me.
Mr. Tremaine, I've undertaken to protect your physical safety. That pledge I will keep. Otherwise, I'm a free agent.
Then you'll accept my commission?
Yes, Lord Darlington, on one condition.
And what's that?
You have asked me to disprove this story. I would prefer that you ask me to establish the truth.
Of course, Holmes, and spare no expense. Remember, the honor of the Darlingtons is at stake.
Well, Holmes, little did I think when Tremaine called on us this morning that we'd end up the day tramping a village lane in Surrey, looking for a Dr. Godfrey.
And yet, that gentleman must surely be able to give us the final answer. Lady Darlington said that he attended
her.
Yes,
but supposing the companion story was true and they had changed names.
Even so, the good doctor will certainly know whether the boy was born to a slight blonde woman like Lady Darlington, or a brunette Amazon like Maud Harris.
Well, here's the doctor's house. They said in the village it was the one with the gabled roof.
No lights visible. I hope the doctor's not out.
Doesn't seem to be any answer. Confound it. I don't believe there's anyone at home.
And you will observe, Watson, that this morning's delivery of milk still stands on the doorstep. Curious. Let's explore a little.
Well, perhaps the doctor's gone away for a few days.
If so, he's a very careless man. Look, that window's wide open.
Do you think think we might go in and look round?
We not only might, we will go in. Too much is at stake to stand on ceremony. Strike a match, Watson.
Right, you are. Light that lamp. There you are. Holmes! Holmes, look, look, look! The figure slumped over the desk.
Someone has reached the doctor before us.
He's been shot through the chest. He's dead, Holmes.
How long would you estimate he's been dead, Watson?
About 24 hours, I say.
So now we become involved in murder as well as blackmail.
Well, the answer's perfectly obvious to me. Tremaine came here and shot him. He knew that he could never blackmail Lord Darlington while this doctor was still alive.
Not necessarily, Watson. If the story of the substitution is true, you must realize that one other person would have an equal motive for murder.
Wait, Scott Holmes, who?
Lord Darlington himself.
Well, Dr. Watson, so you went to interview that village doctor and arrived there to find him dead.
Yes, Mr. Bell, but before we reported the tragedy to the police, Sherlock Holmes conducted an intensive search of the dead man's room. After a moment, he turned to me and said...
Watson, we must see what the inanimate objects in this room can tell us. Aha, here's the doctor's appointment pad. Let's see who his last visitor was.
Look, look, there's the name of Darlington.
Yes, but that tells us little. If the companion's story is true, the word Darlington could refer to either of the women or to Lord Darlington himself. But what are these letters scribbled before the word Darlington? Why must doctors have such illegible handwriting?
Doctors don't have illegible handwriting.
I disagree. In fact, I've often thought they train you to write badly in medical colleges. Yes. The letters are R-E, Re.
Re, Re, Darlington. That means that someone was calling about the Darlington case.
A fact we already knew.
Yes.
Let's see what else we can find. Hello. Look over here on the sideboard.
Brandy decanter with a stopper left out.
And one glass that has been drunk from.
The killer must have had a drink after he shot the doctor.
And in so doing, I think he gave us the clue to his identity.
Oh, how?
There's a speck on the rim of this glass. I think it's... Ah, the very thing, the doctor's microscope. Most convenient.
What does it tell you, Holmes?
Wait a minute. Uh-huh. I was right. This speck on the glass is wax.
Wax? Then that means the murderer used a candle.
Oh, no, Watson. Come on. We must go back to the village and report his death. And then we'll catch the next train to London.
Aren't you going to stay here and help the police?
Why should I? Beyond telling them the name of the murderer.
You mean you know who did it?
Of course. And so should you.
Well, I don't.
But we don't know the answer to the Darlington substitution scandal. That answer, Watson, still lies in London.
£9,000, £9,500, £10,000. Well, there you are, Reginald.
Thank you, my dear cousin.
I'll put the money in my bag, Reginald.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Lord Darlington, that sheaf of banknotes in Miss Harris' hand. Surely you didn't pay the blackmail.
I discussed the matter with my wife, Mr. Holmes. She's deeply upset. We both agreed that the scandal, once started, would cling to us for life, even if it was disproved later. That's why I paid the money.
You engaged me as your representative in this case, Lord Darlington. Miss Harris, give that money back at once.
It was a gift from Lord Darlington, in front of a witness. If you try to touch it, I shall send for a policeman.
That won't be necessary. Two of them are waiting in the anteroom now.
Police? Oh, Holmes, you shouldn't have done it. I wanted no breath of this scandal to emerge from beyond these four walls.
The fact that police are here has nothing to do with the problems of blackmail. I brought them here to apprehend a murderer.
A murderer? What do you mean?
Dr. Godfrey, your wife's physician, was shot dead during the past 24 hours.
He was killed before he could tell us the true answer to the parentage of the child upstairs.
Murdered? Oh, what a dreadful thing. Have you any idea who did it?
Every idea, Lord Darlington. But before I expose the criminal, I'd be obliged if you'd bring Lady Darlington here. And also the child.
Oh, very well, Holmes. This is going to be a terrible shock to her.
You're suddenly very quiet. Tremaine?
Am I? I was wondering who might have killed Dr. Godfrey.
Fortunately, we don't have to wonder. The murderer left a clue. After he'd committed the crime, he made the mistake of taking a drink.
Darlington's quite a drinking man, you know.
And you have been known to take a drink on occasions too, Mr. Tremaine. For instance, after you'd killed Dr. Godfrey.
After I'd...
What rubbish are you saying?
You see, the murderer left a tiny blob of wax on the glass.
Oh, what does that prove? Merely that someone had been carrying a candle.
But this wasn't candle wax. It was cosmetic wax, such as you used to wax that pointed moustache of yours.
Reginald.
All right, all of you, I'm getting out of here.
He snatched my bag. Reginald, come back here.
I'll go after him.
No, Watson. The police are prepared to arrest him, but not the young lady. We shall need her cooperation in the last act of this little tragedy.
Surely the whole thing's clear by now. If Tremaine killed the doctor, obviously the whole story about the substitution is a lie.
Not necessarily. Even if it were true, the doctor was still a menace to his plans. How could he and Miss Harris ask the highest price for their secret when the doctor also knew it? No, Watson. Tremaine had a motive for murder either way. In the meanwhile, I must set the stage before Lady Darlington gets here. Where'd I put that parcel? Oh, here it is.
What the devil have you got in there, Holmes?
A present from a plumber friend of mine. Though the object in this package is only a simple tool of his trade, I feel that it may give us the answer to a peer's inheritance.
Upon my soul, you're being very mysterious.
In a few moments, I propose to conduct a test. You must hide outside the windows. When I turn down the gaslight over the mantel here, Watson, I want you to strike a match, apply to the object in this package, and toss it through the open window. At the same time, cry out the word fire at the top of your voice.
I remember that.
I think the results of the experiment may prove quite startling. Lord Darlington, now that all the principals in this case are assembled, I shall conduct my experiment.
Very well, Holmes.
I don't see why I had to bring the boy down here. It's long past his bedtime.
I assure you, Lady Darlington, that his presence is absolutely essential. Please place him in the bassinet on the sofa.
All right.
That's it. And you, Miss Harris, will you be good enough to place your handbag on the table?
Very well, Mr. Holmes. But no funny business now. The police took it away from Reggie and gave it back to me. That money's mine.
Each of you ladies claim to be the mother of that boy. Since scientific tests of parentage are notoriously unreliable, I shall conduct a simple experiment which I think may give us the truth in this matter. Now, I want both you ladies to come toward me with outstretched hands. That's it. I turn down the gaslight over the mantel, so.
Fire! Fire!
Oh, dear, darling!
It's all right. It's all right. If you look closely, you'll observe that this object is a perfectly harmless plumber's smoke rocket.
Fire!
You can drop the masquerade, Watson. The case is solved.
Oh, is it Holmes?
Holmes, what on earth are you up to?
You notice that on the cry of fire, Miss Harris ran for her handbag containing the £10,000. Lady Darlington instinctively rushed to her son. I think, Lord Darlington, that there can no longer be any question of the child's parentage.
Midnight. Huh. It's been a long day, Holmes.
Yes, but profitable, Watson. A very profitable day's work indeed.
Here's 1,000 guineas from Lord Darlington.
And don't overlook the £20 that Mr. Tremaine gave me.
I certainly shan't. He retained you for protection, and you end up by sending him to the gallows.
A fate that he richly deserves. I only wish I could have persuaded Lord Darlington to prosecute Miss Harris. Blackmail is a devilish crime.
Funny to think that a simple plumber's rocket smoked out the truth.
Yes. Though, you'll remember, I've had occasion to use the instrument before. When a woman thinks her house is on fire, her impulse is at once to rush to the thing she values most. It's a perfectly overpowering instinct.
Well, you certainly took advantage of the fact.
Ah, well, Watson, you may remember the old Persian saying, there's danger for him who taketh the tiger cub, and danger for whoso snatches delusion from a woman.
Oh, really, huh?
Oh, yes, Watson. There's as much sense in Hafiz as in Horace, and as much knowledge of the world.
Well, Dr. Watson, that was a very exciting story.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Bell. Incidentally, don't you think you'd better tell our listeners about the change of day and time for our next meeting?
Yes, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, our next broadcast will be on Monday, January 13th, over these same stations. And better consult your newspaper for the time. Now, Dr. Watson, how about next week?
It's not next week, Mr. Bell. It's a week from next Monday.
Yes, of course. Well, what story are you going to tell us a week from next Monday?
I think I'll tell you about the Devil's Foot.
The Devil's Foot? What was that?
I won't tell you now, Mr. Bell, but I will say that Sherlock Holmes and I never encountered a more gruesome or a more horrible mystery.
Tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, A Scandal in Bohemia. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo. And inviting you to be with us 1 week from Monday. That's January 13th, when Dr. Watson will tell us about the Devil's Foot. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Untuned to Yesterday, an ABC broadcast from January 4, 1947. The story based on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's A Scandal in Bohemia. In the year previous, Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce starred in two motion pictures based on the characters, Dressed to Kill and Terror by Night. You're listening to an hour of mystery, Untuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now another movie actor in a leading detective-style role, it's Alan Ladd in Box 13. This episode called The Dead Man Walks, from June 12th, 1949.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. I saw your ad in the paper and I wondered if you'd help me. I can't go to the police, and I have no money for a private detective. But my father is in trouble, I'm sure. And when you find out who he is, you'll know why I can't go to the police and why I must...
Know why I can't go to the police and why I must have help. This is Sheila Corbett, 356 Waring Avenue. It didn't sound like much, this letter. But I did find out who her father was. I found him dead. Then learned he was alive. Sure, it sounds impossible, but that was it.
And now back to The Dead Man Walks, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
I wonder why she can't go to the police.
Susie, if I knew that, I wouldn't have to go to see Mrs. Corbin.
Gee, Mr. Holliday, it sure sounds like a wild goose chase. It'll probably turn out to be a dud. Oh, is that the word I wanted?
Susie, only you can give the answer to that question.
Well, once in a while I get a word right. Well, don't I?
Oh, sure, sure. That's what makes it so interesting. When you do get one right, I don't know what you're talking about.
Kind of makes it the slice of life, huh?
Two strikes and before you foul tip the next one, I'm leaving for... What was that address?
Oh, 356 Waring Avenue.
356 Waring Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
So long, Susie. It wasn't a very nice neighborhood, 356 Waring Avenue. But the flat I entered was neat, clean, scrubbed, and polished. And the woman who asked me to sit down was as neat and clean as the room. I waited for her to start things, and she did.
I'm Mrs. Sheila Corbett.
Yes, I guess that. And I'm Box 13. My name's Dan Holliday.
Well, I don't know how to start, Mr. Holliday.
The beginning's always a good place, Mrs. Corbett. Saves time and trouble.
I want you to find my father.
You said you couldn't go to the police about it. Why not?
Because my father's a paroled convict. Do you understand?
Are you afraid he's done something?
No, I know that's not true. He swore he'd go straight when he came home.
But you think he hasn't.
I didn't say that.
But the fact that you're afraid to go to the police says so. Look, Mrs. Corbett, if he's done nothing wrong, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yes, I know. But there'd be questions. I have two children, Mr. Holliday. A husband who is wonderful to me. No one in this neighborhood knows about my father, so... Well...
All right, Mrs. Corbett, I'll give it a whirl. But first, when did you last see your father?
The day after he was released on parole, he came here.
Was he all right?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. He'd come home. He was here maybe 2 hours when the phone rang.
Sheila! Sheila, telephone!
Answer it, will you, Dan?
All right. Hello? Oh, yeah, it's me. Why'd you call up? Look, I said nothing doing. I meant it. I'm straight now. Nothing doing. You won't get them, and I won't say where they are. Let me alone, will you? Just let me alone.
Dad. Dad, who was it?
Just a man I used to know.
Who?
Nobody you know, honey.
Well, what did he want?
Nothing.
You were afraid. Why? Why were you afraid?
It wasn't anything, Sheila.
Dad, if there's something wrong...
There ain't.
You're on parole.
I know it. Don't you think I know it?
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. But, Sheila...
What, Dad?
Yeah. I want you to keep this for me.
What is it?
Just a piece of paper with something on it. Put it in a safe place. Keep it for me.
Keep it for you? Dad, why do you say that?
There's nothing to worry about, Sheila. Nothing at all. Now, just forget all about it and don't worry, because there ain't anything to worry about.
He said there wasn't anything to worry about, Mr. Holliday. But I was worried. He didn't come home that night. For the next day.
And you don't know where he went?
No.
May I see the piece of paper he gave you?
Yes, here it is.
Is this all?
That's all.
517 Slack Street, S. Thomas, 945. Does this mean anything to you?
No.
Do you know the address, 517 Slack Street?
Not at all.
And the name, S. Thomas?
I never heard it before.
Hmm. Do you mind if I take this?
No, of course not. Do you think you know what it means?
No more than you do, but I'll try to find out.
How?
By going to 517 Slack Street and seeing if there's a Mr. S. Thomas there. A piece of paper with a message on it seemed like it might be a reminder to meet Mr. S. Thomas at 945 at this address. But when? What day? Why? Was S. Thomas the man who called Mrs. Corbett's father on the phone? You know, a guy can ask himself a lot of questions and get no answers. So I drove to 517 Slack Street. It was a pawn shop with everything from gold toothpicks to elephant heads. And clocks. Lots of clocks that ticked off little punctuation marks into the silence. Hello? Hello? Anybody here? Holy mackerel. Holy mackerel. Hey, what the?
Out like high-button shoes.
You wake up. Come on.
No.
That's the boy. Come on, sit up.
Sit up? Without my head?
Look, fella, parking on the side of the road isn't allowed.
Who are you?
State trooper. Who are you?
I'm Dan Holliday.
Welcome to Hamilton County.
What did you say?
Look, are you drunk?
Did you say Hamilton County?
That's it. We saw your car. Looked like there wasn't anybody in it. Stopped to take a look.
And found me.
You're no Easter egg, but brother, all that lump on your head needs is a shell.
How far is it to the city?
About 70 miles.
Thanks, I'll be going now.
Oh, no, maybe you better come with us.
All right. Get in touch with Lieutenant Kling. I'll identify myself and tell him a nice story. He won't believe it, but I've got a lump on my head to back me up.
That's happened from the beginning.
You don't believe me, do you?
You saw a dead man on that pawn shop.
Then somebody teed off on me for a hole-in-one. When I woke up, I was out in the country. Out in the next county.
In your own car?
In my own car.
What time did you go to the pawn shop?
It was 2:15.
5 now. That's better than 3 hours. And no dead bodies have been reported. I keep in touch with them.
I tell you, I saw one.
Whose?
I didn't ask.
What did he look like?
Medium height, gray hair, blue suit.
Yellow?
That's about all I can tell you.
Gray. Nothing else?
I didn't get to count his teeth because the roof fell in. Look, I've got a knot on my head. Doesn't that prove anything?
Yeah, I guess it does. But you're sure you didn't recognize the man you saw lying dead?
No, I never saw him before.
And you went there looking for...
I'll be doggone.
What's the matter?
I didn't ask her his name.
Her? Who?
Mrs. Sheila Corbett.
What?
Does that fence strike a spark in your iron head?
You ever heard of a man named Winslow? Albert Winslow?
No.
Ex-convict, paroled, sent up for counterfeiting.
It might be. You got a picture of him?
Yeah, wait a minute. Sergeant, file on Albert Winslow. Bring it in.
Albert Winslow has a daughter named Mrs. Sheila Corbett. Is that it?
What deduction? By the way, Winslow answers the description of your dead man, roughly.
Then let's get going.
Hold your horses. Bring it here, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Nice.
Let's see it.
There you are. Now, that's all, Sergeant.
Okay.
Kling, look. This is Albert Winslow, and Albert Winslow is the man I saw dead in that pawn shop.
You're sure?
Look, could I make this up?
I guess not. Okay, Dan, let's go to your pawn shop. Let's see what we can redeem. This is it.
517 Slack Street.
Come on. It's the same place?
Sure it is.
Yes, sir. May I do something for you?
Maybe. This your shop?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Were you in here at 2:15 this afternoon?
2:15? Well, yes, yes, why?
You're sure?
Well, of course.
How long have you been here?
Why, about 15 years.
I mean today.
Holiday. Would you like my badge?
Badge?
Yeah, police. Homicide.
Oh, my goodness, sir.
Yeah, I... What's the matter, Dan?
You'll take a look behind this counter.
Huh? Well, I'm looking. What am I supposed to see?
Albert Winslow dead.
Where?
Look, Winslow is behind this counter at 2:15 this afternoon.
Excuse me, but I don't understand this.
Neither do I.
What's your name?
Holiday.
Shut up. Yours?
Barlow. Michael Barlow.
You know a man named Albert Winslow?
I never heard of him. No, I'm sure I didn't.
Mind if we look over your place?
Oh, certainly not. But I still don't understand.
I'll draw it for you, Mr. Barlow. At 2:15 this afternoon, I walked into this shop.
This one?
This one. There was no one here except a dead man behind the counter. Then I was slugged.
In here?
That's right.
But that's impossible. Well, I mean... I've been here all day.
Come on, we'll take a look around.
Wait a minute, Kling.
What now?
This place looks a little different from what it did earlier. It looks as though it's been changed around.
Well, that's impossible, too.
Dan, are you sure this is the place?
Of course I am.
Okay, we'll give it a fine tooth comb job.
Certainly, help yourselves. I'll be only too glad to do anything I can, although this is certainly very peculiar.
Thus, we have the understatement of the week.
Well, let's get...
That's my phone. May I answer it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. There won't be a minute. Hello? Who? Oh, yes, yes, just a minute. Lieutenant Kling.
Yeah?
It's for you.
Thanks. Be right with you. Hello? Yeah, go ahead, Sergeant. What? Say that again. Okay, thank you. We won't have to go over your place, Barlow.
You won't?
What are you talking about, Kling?
Holiday is a Sergeant Garvin. He's very efficient.
So, what's that got to do with this?
Lots. I left word where I could be reached. He reached me.
What are you building up to?
I don't know, but it's not good for you.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
More to the point, what's on yours?
Now, look, I don't get this. What was that call about?
About Albert Winslow.
Go on.
You saw him dead at 2:15.
I said I did.
You want to change your story?
Now, look, why should I?
Because Albert Winslow reported to his parole officer no later and no earlier than 4:20 this afternoon.
The man I saw dead at 2:15 was alive again at 4:20. That's impossible. Kling said it was, and better than Kling, my own common sense said it was. So later that night, I went back to see Mrs. Corbett.
But you went to the police. You promised you wouldn't.
I'm sorry, but I had to. I saw your father.
Dead. Dead, you said.
I know that's a brutal way to put it, Mrs. Corbett, but the only way.
And the police?
There's nothing they can do or want to do. Your father reported to his parole officer. He has to do that once a month.
Please, please find him.
I think I did find him.
Oh, no. No, it can't be.
Mrs. Corbett, I've got to ask some questions. You've got to answer them.
Well, I'll try.
Good. Now, look, your father talked to someone on the phone. He didn't mention any names?
No.
Not even the name Thomas?
I'm sure of it.
One dead end after another. Do you know the names of any of your father's, well...
accomplices?
Yes.
I don't remember any names, but I can tell you the place where he used to meet. Where he was arrested.
Where was it?
A house in Brennan Square. 618, I think.
Now, you said your father spoke to someone on the phone and said he wouldn't give them something.
But I don't know what he was talking about.
And you hadn't heard from him at all?
No.
And you're sure you'd get in touch with him?
Oh, I know it.
Okay, Mrs. Corbett. I'll try the lead you gave me. 618 Brennan Square. 618 Brennan Square was an old frame house that looked as though its last tenants had moved out to go to George Washington's inaugural. Windows were boarded up and the rusty iron fence in front bowed politely to the houses across the street. I walked up the stairs and knocked on the front door, never expecting an answer. I was about to turn away and chalk this off to exercise when...
Yeah? What do you want?
I'm looking for someone.
Ain't nobody here.
Mr. S. Thomas, perhaps?
Nobody. Now beat it.
Just a minute. Maybe you've got an Albert Winslow living here.
What was that name again?
Albert Winslow, as in Homer.
I don't get it.
You wouldn't. But do you know anyone by that name?
Maybe you better come in.
Maybe I should.
Come on.
Do you live here?
Caretaker, that's all.
Oh, I see.
What you stopping for?
I don't like haunted houses. This looks like one.
You're nuts.
Look, before we go any farther, maybe you'd like to tell me why you let me in when I mentioned the name of Albert Winslow.
Maybe he was a friend of mine.
I think I'd like a breath of fresh air.
Maybe you'll be lucky to get any breath at all, chum.
Oh, it's that way, huh?
This way.
What's the idea?
It was yours, chum. Now, come on. Get in front of me. Come on. Company, Eddie. Looking for Al.
Getting crowded in here. Come in. I've seen you before, Sumpel. Oh, yeah. You came in Barlow's shop this afternoon. You didn't stay long, did you?
I took a sleeping tablet over the head. And you prescribed it, huh?
Yeah. I thought maybe you were just a guy, but now you come nudging in here. Charlie.
Hey.
He asked for Al, huh?
That's that.
Sit down. Charlie, see if Barlow's come to.
Okay.
Barlow? The pawn shop owner?
That's right. We couldn't get anything out of him, so we'll try you.
What do you mean?
Guess. Take a look at Barlow.
You gave him plenty to remember you by, didn't you?
Uh-huh. Now, you keep looking at him and keep thinking how you look if you don't talk.
About what?
That's a starter. Not talk.
Sure, I still say about what?
I'll give you 5 minutes to tell us where the plates are.
Plates?
Yeah, plates.
Oh.
I don't know what you're...
Barlow's stubborn. You gonna be that way, too?
Come on, let him alone.
Sure, but him and Winslow were pals. Winslow would tell him, maybe you know, too.
Look, I'm trying to find Winslow, that's all.
That's all, huh?
Why, you...
Sit still.
And take it. Now, come on, where are the plates? What did Winslow do with them? He hit them before he took the rap, and we want them.
Counterfeit plates?
Where are they?
I don't know.
All right, Charlie, go ahead. Go ahead and make him talk.
That's no use, Eddie. He won't spill.
Get rid of it, then.
No, either he or Barlow knows where Winslow's plates are.
Barlow. Barlow doesn't know, neither do I.
I think he's telling the truth, Eddie.
Go through his pockets.
Okay. Identification cards. Name Dan Holliday.
Do your reading some other time. What else is it?
Look. Eddie, look.
517 Slack Street, S. Thomas, 945.
That's the pawn shop, Barlow's place.
Yeah. What's the rest of it mean?
I don't know.
You. What's this mean?
And if I tell you I don't know, I'll get battered around like a cue ball again.
Why, you...
Cut it out, Eddie.
Well, I know.
Look. He went to Barlow's place this afternoon. If he knew where the plates were, he wouldn't be here, would he?
So?
They've got to be at Barlow's shop.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Okay, tie them up, both of them. And Mr. Holliday, if we come back without the plates, you walk out without your head.
They did a good job of tying Barlow and me to the chairs. Then when they were gone, I talked with Barlow. Barlow, are you all right?
Yeah, I think so.
What happened? Who were those men?
They knew Albert Winslow years ago. He engraved counterfeit plates.
What happened in your shop?
I was in the shop early this afternoon. I hadn't seen Albert since he was released. Then he came into my shop. First, I didn't recognize him. And he spoke to me.
You remember me, don't you, Barlow?
I seem to.
Take a good look.
Al Winslow.
How are you?
Fine. But you?
Parole.
Oh, I see.
It's all right, Barlow. I'm going straight.
Well, of course. Here, sit down. Back in the shop.
Wait a minute. I want to take a look around.
Yeah, what are you looking for, Al?
Things didn't change much around here, did they?
Well, what do you mean?
Nothing. Look, Barlow, I want to go straight, so there's something I got to tell you.
What's the matter? Oh, customers. I'll be back in a minute.
No,
not customers.
Put that. Hello, Al. Eddie. This is Charlie. You remember Charlie,
sure.
Hi. Sit down, Barlow. Take it easy.
What is this?
Sit down, Barlow. Do what he says.
That's right.
Okay, Al, where are they? I told you on the phone you can't have them. I'm going straight. I'm going to turn them over to the government.
Sure. Beautiful place like those. Not much, you want. Where are they?
No. I won't tell you.
Don't be a sap. We'll take them and get out.
Then I'd be picked up again. The feds know my work. I'll have a great chance. I'm on parole. Please. Let me alone. Just let me alone.
Sure. When we get the plates. They in here?
No.
Barlow, what do you say?
You don't know anything.
Come on, Al. Where are they?
Look, I got to report to my parole officer this afternoon. If I don't, they'll come after me. And you.
Oh, cut it out.
I...
Hey, Charlie, come here.
Al.
Oh, Eddie.
Why, you idiot, you mutton head. You killed him.
Call the police.
Get Winslow behind the counter. Now, come on.
Eddie, there's somebody coming in.
Barlow, get out of sight. Charlie, get Winslow behind the counter. Now, duck back of that screen. Come on.
Hello? Anybody here?
That was you, Mr. Holliday. Eddie hit you and you saw Winslow's body.
Uh-huh. That's where I came in. But later when I went back with Lieutenant Kling, what about that?
Well, I had to do what I did. They were upstairs. My wife was there. They threatened to...
I see. But Winslow reported to his parole officer that afternoon, after he was dead.
It was a telephone call they made from my shop. Charlie pretended to be Winslow. He told the officer he'd report in person in an hour. Then he hid Winslow's body in the basement. It's there now.
Oh, nice, clever people. Now, what about those plates? Do you know where they are?
No. But Winslow frequently came to see me. He was often in the
Barlow.
Shop alone and...
Barlow, I've got it. I know where those plates are.
Where?
Come on, let's get out of here first.
Yeah, but how?
Look, there's a drinking glass on that table. I'll squirm my chair over there and knock the glass on the floor to break it.
Well, but I...
Hold it.
Here I go.
Okay, Barlow. Scrape over. Overturn your chair and get a piece of glass. Cut these ropes on my hand. I've got a date with a boy named Eddie. And he who slaps last, slaps best.
Better wait outside the shop, Holliday.
Oh, no, Kling, I'm too fond of Eddie. A lump on my head and a welt across my face. Please, don't shoot him.
No, take it easy. Kelly, Macklin, take the back. Go ahead. You ready, Dan?
Yeah, let's go.
Let it go.
Why, you.
Hello, Eddie.
There, you need any help?
No. Just pick him up and steer him in my direction.
That's enough, boys. All cleaned up.
Eddie disappointed me.
Yeah, me too. He didn't hit you once. All right, out you go. Gully, take Pretty Boy here and slap some jewelry on him. And, what are you looking at, Holiday?
Me? Why, I'm looking at Mr. S. Thomas.
Huh? I thought his name was Eddie.
I'm not looking at him, Kling. I told you I was looking at Mr. S. Thomas. And 9:45.
Well, go on, Mr. Holiday. What then? Who was Mr. S. Thomas, and what did 9:45 mean?
Mr. S. Thomas, Susie, was a clock. One of the famous old Seth Thomas clocks. It was the only one in the shop whose hand stood at 9:45.
Yeah, and?
Well, Winswood put his counterfeit plates on the pendulum arm, and that's where they were when we got them.
You mean they looked like a pendulum weight?
Exactly. It was very clever.
But, gee, what if somebody had bought the clock?
Well, that was a chance he took, but no one did. And that's that.
There's one more thing that puzzles me.
One?
Yeah. Suppose Eddie and Charlie got the plates and made counterfeit money from them.
So?
Would they have to declare it for income tax?
Income? Oh, good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holiday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with this week's original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. Part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and that of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Carstensen. Box 13 is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
Box 13 on Tuned to Yesterday from June 12, 1949, a syndicated broadcast. Wrapping up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.